This is Fresh Air. I'm Dave Davies in for Terry Gross, who's off this week. Our guests today are actors Denzel Washington and LaTanya Richardson Jackson, who've gotten rave reviews for their starring roles in the Broadway revival of the influential play A Raisin in the Sun. Denzel Washington's been nominated for 4 Academy Awards and has won twice for Glory and Training Day. Among his other films are Malcolm X, Philadelphia, American Gangster, and Flight. He also won a Tony Award in 2010 for his leading role in the August Wilson play Fences. LaTanya Richardson Jackson has been appearing on stage, screen, and television for more than 30 years. She received a Tony nomination for Best Actress for her role in A Raisin in the Sun. She's married to fellow actor Samuel L. Jackson. A Raisin in the Sun debuted on Broadway in 1959 and was adapted to film 2 years later. It tells the story of the Youngers, a struggling black family living in an apartment on Chicago's South Side. The family's fortunes could change with the arrival of a life insurance check on its way to the family's matriarch, Lena, played by Richardson Jackson. But her son, Walter Lee, dreams of using the money to start a business and get out of his job as a chauffeur. Denzel Washington is Walter Lee, the role played by Sidney Poitier in the original Broadway production and the 1961 film. This production has received a total of 5 Tony nominations, including 1 for Best Revival of a Play. Denzel Washington, LaTanya Richardson Jackson, welcome to Fresh Air. This play debuted in 1959. What did it mean to each of you? I mean, the play itself.
I'd never seen the play. And I saw a production maybe 10 years ago when they did it on Broadway. But actually, I had never seen, I obviously didn't see the original, but I hadn't seen the film either. You know, Lorraine Hansberry, I mean, I've been very blessed to get to interpret 2 great playwrights, African-American playwrights, Lorraine Hansberry and August Wilson. So it is a real pleasure and an honor to speak her words.
Yeah, Ms. Richardson Jackson, did it mean anything to you coming in?
This is a real important play in the canon of American plays, and it's important that we are always mindful that Lorraine Hansberry's play, that A Raisin in the Sun, sits in that canon with, you know, The Glass Menagerie or Death of a Salesman. It's important to me that it's done and actually done often.
Let's hear a clip from the play. This is early on in the play, and Denzel Washington, or you play...
Okay, I'm not going to listen to it because I don't like to hear it.
Really?
So,
why is that?
No, because I don't like hearing my own voice.
Well, I apologize for that. The rest of us kind of like it.
Okay, well, you listen to it, and then LaTanya, you
and
point
I'll
at
tell
me.
Him when. Okay, and okay. Then I'll tell him when to come back.
Okay.
This is our guest Denzel Washington playing Walter Lee Younger. This is a point early in the play where he is, Denzel Washington, you're having breakfast with your wife, Ruth, who's played by Sophie Okonedo. And the plot revolves around this family that's living together in the Chicago apartment, and they're expecting a $10,000 insurance payment that the matriarch will get because her husband has died. And Denzel's character, Walter Lee, has big plans to start a business. His wife, not so excited about it. Let's listen.
Walter, leave me alone. Eat your eggs, they're gonna get cold.
Leader, man say I got me a dream, woman say eat your egg. Man say I gotta take hold of this here world, baby. Woman say eat your eggs and go to work. Man say I gotta change my life, I'm choking to death. Woman say your eggs is getting cold.
Walter, that ain't none of our money.
This morning, I'm in the mirror, in the bathroom, I'm thinking. I'm 40 years old, I've been married 11 years, and I got a boy who sleeps on the living room couch, and all I got to give him is nothing. Nothing but stories about how rich white people live.
Eat your eggs.
Damn my eggs. Damn all the eggs I ever wanted.
And that's our guest Denzel Washington and Sophie Okonedo in the Broadway production of Raisin in the Sun. Sophie Okonedo, who plays your wife, said that this play by Lorraine Hansberry is so deep that the more she reads it, the more she finds in it. You keep digging and digging. She says there's no bottom to it. Did you find that as you performed it?
Well, I think that's one of the great parts of live theater. You know, there is something new every night, and you know, it's like music. You have the sheet music, but then you play it, and there's different rhythms to it. There's different things you hear. There's things you hear for the first time, or you know, the mistakes are the best part sometimes too. So,
your character is a man who has a lot of dreams, and one of the things he clearly talks about from time to time is seeing, you know, white executives in restaurants, you know, making deals and having access to a life that he doesn't. And I wonder if that's something that you experienced as a young man, or your father.
No, not like this, I guess, because he's a limo driver and drove around a very wealthy, I guess, wealthy man. He had a certain, he could see it, but he's seeing it from the car. He's opening doors. He's not sitting in there having dinner. You know, it's a part of what he doesn't understand. He's, as he explains to his mother, they're just sitting there turning deals worth millions of dollars. As he says, well, no, they're not just sitting there turning deals. They're, you know, he's not up in the office when they're doing the grunt work. So that's the gap that he doesn't understand, that it isn't that easy. And as soon as he gets an opportunity, he, you know, gets in bed with the wrong person. He doesn't understand business. He thinks he does because he drives around people who do. For myself, I wasn't around a lot of rich white folks as a kid. Although, I mean, no, that's not true totally. I went to private school in high school, so, you know, I got real close to them, and I realized, oh, they had a lot of dirty laundry too, or the kids of rich white folks. So it wasn't that big a gap for me because I was living with the people, and we got to know each other, and we became good friends, and, you know, we found out how much we were alike.
Well, LaTanya Richardson-Jackson, I hope you'll let us play a clip of your performance. This is one that we have.
I don't care.
This is a moment where the $10,000 insurance payment, you're the matriarch of the family, and this is where this $10,000 insurance payment from your late husband has arrived. And, you know, the family is divided over what is to be done with it. Your son, played by Denzel Washington, has plans to start a business. You have a daughter who has hopes to go to medical school. And at this moment, you're sitting down and you speak to your grandson, Travis, played by Bryce Clyde Jenkins. Let's listen.
I want him to be the first one to hear it. Come here, Travis. Travis, you know that money we got in the mail this morning?
Yes, sir.
You know what your grandmama going to done with that money?
I don't know, grandmama.
She went and she bought you a house. You glad about the house? It's going to be yours when you get to be a man.
Yes, sir. I always wanted to live in a house.
Give me some sugar then. And when you say your prayers tonight, you thank God and your grandfather, because he the one who give it to you in his way.
And that's our guest, LaTanya Richardson-Jackson, who is appearing.
Do you have another clip of that? I wasn't very intrigued by that reading.
You said you weren't intrigued by that reading?
No, I didn't quite like it.
Mm. What was wrong with it?
I was just sitting here listening to it, saying it as I said. Well, that didn't have a lot of melody.
See, that's why I don't like. That's why I don't like to listen.
Now you see, I'm hearing a compelling performance, but you're hearing every little subtlety that didn't go as.
Yeah.
And the performance grows over time, I guess, right?
Yes, it does. Thank God for that.
Well, tell us a little about this character. I mean, she's the matriarch of the family.
For Lena. You know, she's a Southern woman. She's still a Southern woman who has come north with her husband, presumably seeking a better life, and they end up, it's that conundrum. You end up in the north with a job working, but you lose the land. You know, in the south, you've got the land, and somehow, you know, coming from sharecroppers and, you know, her family situation on farms and whatever, it's a vast place that she comes from to be sort of pushed into this hole, this rat hole that she ends up in. So it's the frustration with that she has built up inside of her as well as what Walter Lee has built up inside of him. But somehow she makes a better resignation about it because she's fighting for the survival of her children. and, you know, her family.
And her kids. And the kids have aspirations maybe that she didn't have. I mean, they take for granted a roof over their head and enough to eat and want bigger things.
I think that she, if there was a dream, she talks about her dream. Her dream was to fix up a house and to have a garden, to fix it up and have a garden. Now, those were her dreams. These other things, these lofty ideas of running businesses and, you know, being a doctor, you know, a nurse or a teacher maybe, but a doctor for Benita is something that she can't even fathom. She just, you know, it's too far in the world, in a world view for her to even access.
Now, you're from the South. You're from Georgia, is that right?
I'm from Atlanta. Yes, I am.
Uh-huh. And you're of course a very different generation than this woman. I mean, you sort of came of age in the '60s, right?
But right. In the 60s and the 70s, yeah, I did. I came of age in it, but I remember it. I remember my grandparents and my mother and my aunts. I remember these women very well, which is, you know, the thing that I've tried to infuse into Lena's character. I remember them and their mannerisms. I remember their hand movements, you know what I mean? I remember them with their handkerchiefs.
Right. And the dialect is distinctly different, I think, than the other characters, yours.
Totally. But, oh, no, it's totally different. They, you know, they are of the North. They're above the Dixon line. I'm below it.
Denzel Washington, so, did you have a family that came up from the South that, I don't know, that evoked, you know, kind of that resonated here?
All African Americans, you know, came up from the South, either from the West Indies or through the South. You know, we were all on slave ships and worked on plantations. And that's my, I'm sure that's LaTanya's history. That's my history. That's the history of every African American I know. My mother was born in Camilla, Georgia. My father was born in Virginia. My father was a farmer. His father was a farmer. His father was a slave.
When I watched the film, The Raisin in the Sun, I mean, it's impressive. It's dramatic. It's not especially funny. The play is very funny. Did you guys do things to bring out the comedy in it? Or is that a matter of just having a live audience in front of you?
I think it's a more natural rendition of the play, that the archetypes that had to be played in the 50s, we've relaxed. We don't have to be those people now. We don't have to be the best look. You know what I mean? The best look. We don't have to always, you know, black people had an image issue. So a lot of it had to do when the play was done before and when the film was done, I think, had to do with the image that was being portrayed in a different kind of way. We are looking at this play, I think, Kenny Leon, the director, says that he's trying to make an intimate play out of a huge master work. And the only way that you can do that is to humanize the characters and sort of lift that onus of archetype off of them, where everything is played in such a haughty, lifted way.
So you mean like
an affected manner? It's not affected that way. You see what really possibly went on. They would have killed each other if they had been in there in a space that small. You know what I mean? It would have been more fighting than was going on.
Tiny apartment sharing a bathroom with your neighbors, right? Yeah. So you're saying that
I didn't know it was funny till the first audience.
Not that funny.
Yeah, who knew? I mean, it wasn't like we were working, we were trying to be funny. You know, people. And you know, again, it's a difference, the times we live in now. Maybe that was no laughing matter then. In 1959, and now there's maybe the audience comes to with a different, and it's different culturally, racially. Sometimes when there's a predominantly white audience, sometimes there's not as much laughter because they're not sure if they're supposed to, you know. But it can be one person or a couple of people that get it going, and then it.
Yeah, I mean, they laugh in places sometimes that we're like, say, they're laughing.
Yeah.
Well, LaTanya, you were saying a moment ago. Were you saying that, you know, 40 years ago, to present kind of an acceptable image of middle-class blacks to mainstream culture, they had to kind of tighten it up and be serious in a way that you don't have to now?
That's my assessment of it. That's how I see it. Because it's, I remember my grandparents especially, if we were in a mix of people where there were members in white society and the white culture, she was always saying, just sit up and you know, look nice. Be nice and be quiet. You know, there was just certain things.
That's right. I remember that.
There were certain things that, you know, certain protocol that you were just asked to adhere to that made it, you know, because you were always representing the race. And the race had an image problem. That's what I'm saying. The race had an image problem because everyone was concerned with all of the stereotypes of how we were perceived. So everyone I knew was trying to undo that perception of loud, you know, raggedy, whatever, dirty, whatever. My family was in a constant hunt to undo all of that. And sometimes, they used to even tell us, if you can't put the sentence together correctly, keep your mouth shut. Shut up. So it's not like that now, though.
Right. Well, you know, this play was known for bringing African-American audiences to the theater when it opened, and still is. Are you aware of that on stage, that it's a different kind of audience?
I think that's what Denzel was just saying. Yeah, we are aware.
What do you mean a different kind of audience? Anybody that can afford to come can
No, come. Are you aware that the audience, it's like when is there more black people, say, than white people?
I don't look out there, so no, I'm not.
No, you got stage lights on you, but I'm just wondering if there's a different feeling in the response that you're getting.
Yeah. I would have to look to know that it was a different. No, I don't know. I mean, no. I mean, because I don't look out there. I mean, unless somebody actually spoke. Maybe I could, I could say, oh, that's a, or think. But I'm not even thinking like that either. I'm not tuned into who's what color and what they might be saying or anything like that.
I'm the totally unorthodox side of all of that because I'm looking. And I can tell you that there's a difference. And, you know, we even have what I call the church crowd. I was like, oh, we got the church crowd.
Yeah, well, we know
today.
Certain days. Yeah, matinee, Sunday matinee, you know, it's going to be, you know, or if you come to work and you see buses out front, you know, you might know that it's going to be a bit different.
And what's the church crowd like?
Loud, but fun. You know what I mean? They enjoy the play. They get absorbed into who the characters are. You know what I mean? They just go with the story and they are invested. It's like, you know, even one, you know, if Walter Lee is doing something, you can hear them say, oh, Walter Lee. You know?
Well, I was there on a matinee.
Yeah, old Denzel.
That's when they're not, like, totally on point.
You know, this production has earned a lot of Tony nominations. You, Denzel Washington, did not get one. But Ben Brantley wrote in the New York Times a piece suggesting that maybe you didn't get one because you kept your ego in check. And he meant this in a complimentary way. He said you kind of kept the phrase was the blistering and bluster to a minimum. Would you agree? Were you conscious of that?
I didn't see the article, but I didn't. What do you mean, like scene stealing or something, or when I go downstage and well upstage other people or something?
I think he was talking about how stars come to Broadway, and immediately they carve a space for themselves in whatever scene and say, "I'm the star and I'm here," and that he didn't do that, but he never does that.
Nah, I'm not wired that way. And, you know, I was acting on the stage long before I was doing movies. So, you know, it's how I was trained, where I was trained, and how I started. And it's just, for me, it's coming back home. You know, I'm just a popular actor. I don't walk around and say, hey, I'm a movie star. I don't know what that
let
what
me throw
what,
my
what
scarf.
Is that occupation? Yeah, let me throw my scarf. Get in my Ferrari.
Oh no, don't say that.
Yeah, well, I might get in my Ferrari. Right. No, I don't have a Ferrari, but you know.
All right.
Aston Martin.
Let me get in my blue Aston Martin.
Well, and we should note that Denzel Washington did win a Tony in 2010 for Fences.
No, he's won them all.
Right. There aren't many things he has not won.
Right. He's won them all.
Latanya Richardson.
I got to do an album. I got to sing next.
No, we're going to miss that.
No, we're going to miss that. We're
going to
miss that. One must know one's limitations.
The Tony, the Oscar, the Grammy. We'll be looking forward to that. Good.
Spoken word.
LaTanya Richardson, now this role was originally going to be played, I think, by Diane Carroll, and then she left, and you came in, I guess, about a month before opening. I don't know how much rehearsing had been done before that, but did that present—
2 weeks.
Did that present any challenges to either of you?
It presented a lot of challenges to me because I had to jump in and learn all those lines. you know, I felt like I was coming from behind. I didn't have any prep time. So, yeah, it was challenging. It was challenging for a while, you know, even challenging during the previews because I felt that I was rehearsing doing the play or, you know, trying to find Lena. You know, when you know that you're going to do something, you do a certain amount of prep work in trying to dig in and sort of bring the person, the character to life. So I didn't get an opportunity to do that. But when I tell you I had the prayers and help of many, and every person in that cast was like standing there, like looking at me like, come on, we can do this, you know. So I'm not complaining at all. It was difficult, but so much in life is.
LaTanya Richardson Jackson, you are married to Samuel L. Jackson and known for having one of the most durable Hollywood marriages. You met where, in college?
Yes, we did. We met in college. He attended Morehouse College, and I'm a graduate of Spelman College in Atlanta, in the Atlanta University complex.
And you were both actors then, or did you get him into it?
You know what? He got himself into it because he was trying to get a grade out of a speech class. Instead of going to speech class, he didn't want to do a speech. And the director told him, well, if you come and you're in the play, because he never had enough guys to do the plays. He said, if you do the play, then, you know, you don't have to do the speech. That's how he got involved. He was a marine biologist. He was trying to go and swim with the fish or something.
Yeah.
He was, you know, he just got interested. He was always along the way because his aunt who taught school in Chattanooga, Tennessee, where he was from, put him in plays because he could learn lines and stuff, you know, but he had no design on it until later.
And so you both, I gather, anticipated acting careers.
No, I had an acting career. I had been at Spelman since I was 14 years old.
You had a career?
I had a career.
Were you working as a young actor?
I was in it. I was in it in Georgia with a woman by the name who's just passed away in January, Georgia Allen, at 96 years old. Took me to Spelman College when I was 14 years old to join the children's theater there. So I was there from the time I was 14 until, you know, forever. And I won an award in Georgia. It was the first year that the theater awards and Georgia Theater Festival had been integrated. Hmm. That must have been 1967. And I won the Best Supporting Actress Award. So I was like, really, like, oh no, I'm an actress.
Well, I mean, it's apparent you've got some chops. I mean, you've accomplished some things. When you had your daughter Zoe, I gather you kind of put your career on hold to hang at home a lot more, right?
No, I didn't kind of. I did.
You did.
Okay. It was like, hang them up, do what you can. I kept my toe in it, you know, a little bit. I got to do some work in the summers when she wasn't in school. But, you know, Sam and I both came from broken homes, as it was. Well, fatherless homes, both being raised by our grandparents, so we had grandfathers. You know, for a long time, I thought that fathers were unnecessary, but you had to have a grandfather. But after that, being the revolutionaries that we thought we were, we said, you know, the most revolutionary thing we think we can do is for a black family to stay together. So whatever it takes, that's going to be our challenge. That's going to be our fight. So soldier on, and that's what we've done. So, yeah, Miss Zoe's a producer now at Top Chef.
Mm-hmm.
Top Chef.
She's what, 20, in her late 20s, right?
I'm not saying, you know, a woman. She'll never come at me saying, why were you on the radio saying how old I was?
Well, you know, while you were, you know, kind of working intermittently and raising your daughter, I mean, Samuel becomes a big star. And I wondered what kind of challenges that presented in the relationship. I mean,
you mean what kind does it still present now when he's here in New York and
too,
wondering what the dinner is and I have to go to work? It's those kind of challenges. You know, I'm Southern, so there's still something there for me about the concern of the wife and the mother for the family in terms of how we get through our day, eating, living, clothed. And I just take that on. And I created, helped create that space, so I'm trying to honor it and be responsible for it. So it's a challenge when he's gone, but it's also a challenge when he's there. So it's a lot, you know? You miss him, and then you say, I'm working too, but I'll get it done. No worries, no worries. Keep doing whatever it is you're doing. It gets a very free space to create. I don't.
We have a few minutes left, Denzel Washington, and I wanted to talk a bit about Flight, the film that you won an Oscar nomination for in a leading role last year. This is a film where you're a pilot with a serious drinking problem and begins with one of the hairiest scenes you'll ever encounter in a film where there's an in-air emergency that leads to a crash landing and you're the pilot. You want to tell us a little about how you prepared for the role?
I just drank every night. I got an opportunity to work with Delta Airlines in their flight simulators. The screenplay, I don't think I'm out of line saying this. The screenwriter is a gentleman who was a recovering alcoholic, so he knows about it. The director as well as being a pilot and a great director.
So Bob Zemeckis, the director, and John Gettins, right there, the screenwriter.
Yeah, and they knew what they were talking about. And it was, you know, there's an old saying, if it ain't on the page, it ain't on the stage. So it was on the page, and it was a role that, especially in film, you just don't come across really great scripts, and this was one of them. So it was something I had to do.
I want to play one scene from the film Flight. And in this film, you do some heroic things in the air when a plane starts to fall apart and manage to execute a crash landing in which most of the occupants of the plane survive. However, you were also kind of drunk and high on cocaine at the time. And this is going to be a problem when the NTSB, the National Transportation Safety Board, gets into an investigation. And in the scene we're about to hear, you're at a funeral for one of the members of the crew who did not survive, and you approach a flight attendant who you've known for many years, and you want to talk to her about what she might tell the investigators about your condition the day of the accident. The flight attendant is played by Tamara Tooney. Let's listen.
Now listen, Margaret, you know I'm in the middle of this investigation. NTSB is investigating the crash.
Yeah, I'm going to talk to him next week.
Yeah, well, I'm a little nervous because I was out the night before the crash at dinner.
Yeah, with Trina.
Right, and I had two glasses of wine, and they're probably going to ask you about my condition that morning or whether you thought I had anything to drink. What?
I've known you 11 years, Whip.
Right.
You want to tell me that you and Trina went to dinner and you had two glasses of wine?
No.
Sounds like a nice restaurant. Now, which one was it?
You have to say that. It was an ordinary day, Margaret. I mean, it was an ordinary day. You know me. I was in shape to fly. And, you have a problem saying that?
It's a lie, Whip. It's a lie. Trina told me you two hadn't been to sleep.
Well, my lack of sleep had nothing to do with that plane falling apart, Margaret. I'm just trying to get this thing straight. Now, you think any other pilot could have landed that plane and saved more lives?
I didn't say that, Whip. I can't imagine another pilot doing it.
Imagine your son, Trevor, in this church looking at you in that box, or my son visiting me in prison
please,
for the next
Whip,
40
enough,
years.
Enough, Whip. Don't you think we've all had enough?
I need this, Margaret.
And that's our guest, Denzel Washington, in the film Flight, the flight attendant there played by Tamara Tooney. This guy is such a fascinating character. I mean, actors love characters that are complex and conflicted. This guy is a bona fide hero, but he's also, how would you describe his flaws?
Well, he's got a serious disease, and he's a professional liar. and he's damaged goods. He's in a lot of pain, but he's also great at what he does, and he has to finally, ultimately, face his demons, as we all do, in an honest way. And you know, I always found it interesting—not interesting, because I made sure to do this. There's a turn in he doesn't actually turn in the film until he asks for God's help. He's on the stand and he says, "God help me." And the prosecutor, whatever, Melissa Leo says, "What'd you say?" Because he kind of mumbles it, and he says, "God help me," and that's the beginning of the rest of his life. And God does help him, and he has to pay the price for the damage he's done. And in fact, I remember talking with the producers and the director. I was like, "I think he should get more time in prison." I thought that we kind of let him off the hook, only giving him 5 years. He should have done 20 years.
You know, that's interesting you say that, because that is a powerful moment in the film near the end where he's managed to cover up most of his, you know, his drinking and the the danger that he put people in, and is about to get away with it and somehow can't. And, you know, when you were last on our program, you were talking about the film Training Day, where you play this rogue cop, and you told Terry Gross it was really important to you that he get that justice be served, and that meant that he not only get killed but be, you know, rejected and humiliated by his community. I was wondering if you felt strongly that this guy had to be held accountable in a way.
The wages of sin is death, and that's what I wrote on the cover of the script on Training Day. And you know, it's not coincidental. I mean, I do this on purpose. I look for that in role, and I turn it into that if it's not even on the page. I did it in Training Day, and that's what it was for me. That was the reason I wanted to do it. The same thing with Flight. It's where he gets to. He has to pay for what he does. But there's an arc to the character. You know, like in this play or in any good screenplay or play, you're looking for the arc of the character. An American Gangster, he ends up a lonely man with a box with his belongings in it, stepping out in a $2 suit in front of a penitentiary. So it wasn't a movie about glorifying drug dealing. It was a movie about the price you have to pay for doing that.
You know, the other thing that occurred to me as I watched your performance is there are a lot of scenes where your character has been drinking quite a bit, but he's a functioning alcoholic and he's used to covering it up. And I wonder kind of how you play somebody who's, you know, impaired but pretty good at hiding it.
Well, I think what you I don't know where I learned that, from acting or from life experience. You don't play drunk. You try to be sober. You're not acting drunk. You are drunk. So you're actually trying to be sober, you know, unless you're comatose. But
right, but you're not drunk.
That's, you know, that's what I do. I mean, I can't give you the how I do it because I don't know. I saw a play called Ruin, and Felia was in it. Felia. But there was a kid in it, and all he did was rock back on his heels. I said, "Man, the way you did that was great. What were you doing?" He said, "I just kept sitting back on my heels, but like until I was almost going to tip over, then I had to lean forward to balance off my feet." And I was like, and I started doing that, and I was like, "Oh." So even now doing the play, so I stole this from you. I forgot his name, the actor. Whenever I'm standing still, or if I need to remind myself in the scene in Raisin in the Sun, especially if I'm standing still, I'll just get back on my heels again. And it's just like a balance thing. So sometimes it's just something, you get a hold of something very technical, you know, whatever handle you use to get in.
Yeah.
You're also very observant, though.
Well, yeah, you got to, yeah, that helps.
You know, most of us.
Like I was watching Mom last night walking. Let's see, I hate to talk about this stuff because you don't want to make people self-conscious.
When you say
just
Mom,
the way
you're talking
she was
about
rock,
your...
LaTanya, rocking back and forth, going to that room to get that money. I said, "Look, she's putting extra on it. Just going to make me feel bad." All of a sudden, she's 20 years extra older. Like, all right, I'm going to give you this money.
feet were hurting.
Yeah, is that what it was? Your feet were just hurting.
I just came from work. That's what I love about doing plays, though, because I get it where you get, you do it where you find it. It's like, oh, right. Tonight I'm tired.
Right. Yeah.
I've been to work.
It's never the same. You don't know what it is. One thing can throw you and propel you. Anything. You don't know what it is. You know, you can trip right before you come on stage, and that could inform the whole scene. Last night or whatever, one of those nights, the girls, I always call it Benita, Anika, was spraying the roach spray stuff, and it spilled. So when I came out, the floor was wet, and I got to come running across to snatch the check, to look at the check. So now I'm aware of the floor, and it actually threw me a little bit in a line. I almost forgot a line because I'm thinking about the floor. So that's, you know, it's live, and it keeps going. You ain't no stopping.
This production of Raisin in the Sun is going to be ending in a few weeks. How do you feel about it coming to an end?
Vacation.
I'm in tears. I can tell you now, every day, I don't even like for him to tell me how many days it is.
How many shows?
How many shows are left?
You don't want to know tonight.
I'm in tears. Because it has truly been the highlight of my theatrical career.
Wow.
I thought For Color Girls a Spell was, but this has taken me into the stratosphere of what was possible in terms of what gets done on stage.
Wow.
This cast for me, I'm like, God, dog, look at her do that. Watch that. Watch him. I see stuff, and I just sometimes, that's why I get lost sometimes, because I'm watching.
Mm-hmm. Like, you kill me. LaTanya will come up with some ad-lib sometimes. She'll just say anything.
Oh, like, keep it moving.
Well, Denzel Washington, LaTanya Richardson Jackson, congratulations on the play. It's terrific, and thanks so
Thank
much
you.
For joining us.
Thank you for Thank coming, you. Dave. Thanks for having us.
Denzel Washington and LaTanya Richardson Jackson star in the Broadway revival of A Raisin in the Sun, which has been nominated for 5 Tony Awards. It runs through June 15th. Coming up, Ken Tucker reviews the second album from singer-songwriter John Fulbright. This is Fresh Air.